There were bodies. Bodies everywhere. Hamunrai, soldiers, Itso Isi, the Imperia, all slumped over.
Did you kill them?
Drugged the tea. They all drank of it. They all collapsed. I could have killed them all. I could have killed the Imperial.
She looked down at the unmoving form of the Divine One. She kicked him sharply in the Divine stomach.
But I did not.
May I ask why?
Because it is not time yet, although my passion would certainly prompt me to.
And at that point I knew beyond question, beyond doubt. I took several steps toward her, or at least as fast as I was able. She looked up at me with luminous eyes.
And because he's your father, isn't that right, Mitsu?
I reached up and yanked the mask away from her face. I have to say, that was one damned ugly woman. Gorgeous eyes, but flattened nose, scarred and twisted lips, and apparently twice as many teeth in her mouth as normally resided there.
Or not?
I held up the blade.
Would you like to lick my sword some more?
The Aeneas ninja had certainly come prepared. She led me a short distance from the camp, and my horse was waiting there, tethered to a small tree. Standing beside it was the animal I presume my rescuer had arrived upon. It was truly a magnificent animal, solid black with a sleek coat and fiery eyes that bespoke intelligence. Then again, considering some of the fools I'd encountered in my life, it wasn't that difficult to find a horse with more brain power than they. And we got the hell out of there. Night had fallen, which meant we could ride only so fast, lest the horses trip. But we pushed the limit as much as we could. We rode long and we rode hard, and the only thing that made me somewhat insane was the Aeneas ninja seemed to be getting tremendous sexual gratification from riding the horse. In fact, she appeared to be bouncing up and down upon the animal with far greater vigor than can remotely have been deemed necessary.
Madam, stop that at once.
As we traveled, my mind was racing ahead of us. I kept toying with the notion of breaking off, trying to escape into the night. But to what end? To return to the Imperia? Perhaps even be rounded up by soldiers who might have awakened at this point from their drug tea? That certainly seemed a less than intelligent strategy. Yet look at the alternative. I was riding hell-bent for leather to keep up with a mysterious, vicious, lethal woman who was leading me to others who were probably just like her. I was willingly being led to the very people who were responsible for the death of the very fellow whose death I was out to avenge. The odds were sensational that they would endeavor to annihilate me the moment I set foot in their lair, wherever that was. Take the Tochi sword and be done. Why did they want the sword? I still had no idea. However, one thing kept tumbling around in my mind, prompted by something that the late Go No-Go had said.
If I had been trying to kill you, you would have been dead!
They didn't just want the sword for some reason. They wanted the sword and me for some reason. I couldn't fathom why. It did, however, embolden me. Once upon a time, I would never have embarked upon such a foolish avenue of endeavor for fear of my life. But as noted, my experiences in Wuhan had hardened me. I did not actively seek out death, but paralyzing dread of it no longer ruled my actions. I was willing to take a chance, to play along with the forked tongue, to see who was in charge and what they wanted. Besides, it wasn't as if the other side in this power struggle was any great delight to work with. The Imperia had tried to have me kill myself. That hardly engendered depths of loyalty. But I was not about to forget they'd slain my teacher. Someone was going to pay for that. And if it meant playing along, outwitting the woman in charge, playing them against each other while seeking out weaknesses I could exploit, well, I was fully confident that I had the mental tools to engage in such a battle of wits and ultimately triumph. Such were the dangers of hubris. It was some hours later that we departed the main road and headed off down a side path. We had gone only a few feet.
Stop!
As I reined up, she vaulted off her horse, went back to the road, pulled some brush from a nearby bush, and wiped away any trace on the dirt road where we had veered off.
Yeah!
The animal obediently charged back off down the main road, vanishing moments later into the darkness. The reason why was obvious. To lead away any possible pursuers. The road was fairly well traveled. It would take even the most eagle-eyed of trackers some work to notice that the number of tracks they were following had gone from 2 to 1. She walked down the dirt road toward me, and I couldn't help but think she'd just created more work for herself. Then I looked beyond her and realized she was walking so lightly she was leaving no tracks in the dirt. I didn't know how such a thing was possible, unless she was spectral. At that point, I wasn't prepared to dismiss any notion out of hand. Just as she leaped onto horseback with facility before, she vaulted this time onto the back of mine. Instantly, she insinuated her body against me.
Let's stay professional, shall we?
Absolutely.
And yet I noticed, as we continued on our way, that apparently the only thing she could hold on to maintain her balance, was my bum. The side road angled downward for a time, and I guided the horse through carefully, keeping an eye out for stray roots or logs overgrown by ivy and weeds. The entire business was becoming increasingly creepy for me. I felt animal eyes upon me from all directions, things moving through the forest.
Easy, easy!
I thought I saw something winged and menacing, and then it was gone. My forest-trained senses were running riot, although part of that might well have been fueled by my agitated state.
Where are we going?
There.
At first, I couldn't see where she was indicating, but then I squinted and was able to make it out. There was what appeared to be some sort of temple or shrine ahead of us, a small building overgrown and covered with weeds and vines. I reined up and dismounted, as the Aeneas ninja lightly vaulted to the ground beside me.
This had better not be a trap.
Or else?
Naturally, I had no fallback.
Yes.
That appeared to confuse her slightly, for which I was glad. My certainty that I was doing the right thing was starting to waver a bit, but it was too late to back out. I waited a few moments for my eyes to adjust, and then I made my way into the temple. As soon as I was within, I saw there were candles burning just ahead. So, someone was waiting for us. This is it. You're not getting out of this, you idiot. You've stuck your head into the noose, and they're going to snap it tight around your neck. Enjoy dancing in the air. But I didn't believe it. As reliable as my inner voice usually was, there was just no feeling of completion. If I were to die here, now, there was too much left unanswered. Too many questions hanging about. None of it made any sense. Then again, life wasn't about making sense. Life was about existing for as long as you could until something or things brought you down. And there was no requirement for closure or an answer to all life's mysteries. In fact, the odds were that when you died, you'd die in ignorance at some level, no matter what. It was hardly a comforting train of thought to engage in. The shadows were long from the candles, and they began to move. I couldn't make out a lot of the darkness, but that much I could see. More of the Aeneas ninjas stepping out from the inky blackness, their eyes glittering. I heard them breathing heavily, and some of them were absently running their hands over their breasts. This was one wild group of shadow warriors. They seemed as likely to embark upon an orgy as kill you. Although, considering the overheated sentiments the ones I had encountered have been spouting up until now, I wasn't sure which would be the preferable fate to suffer. All right, that's obviously not true. But damn, it sounded good, didn't it? The one who had led me there stepped forward, placed her right fist into her left palm, in front of her chest, and then mashed them against her breast 3 times. The others promptly returned what was obviously their form of greeting. And then, from beyond the candles...
So, this is he, the renowned Po.
And you would be? A woman stepped from the shadows. Although to call her a woman would be to understate it. She was quite simply the most magnificent creature I'd ever encountered. The Aeneas ninjas once again performed that bizarre little ritual of breast-pushing, and the gorgeous woman who had taken center stage in this show of force and strangeness returned the gesture. As for me, I had no idea how long I stood there, staring at her. Time seemed to freeze. No, not just freeze. To become utterly irrelevant. I could have remained there all day, just gazing at her. Her fragile chimpanzee features gave her the look of a porcelain doll. Her face was pure white, her eyebrows and eyes delicately underlined and slightly exaggerated, adding to the exotic and erotic look of her. She was the most elaborately costumed individual I'd yet encountered. Her outermost garment was a wide-sleeved jacket, reaching to her waist, with a pattern of bird medallions brocaded in greens and yellows. Attached to the waist of the jacket's back was a long, pleated train of sheer white silk, decorated with yet another dragon design. This one actually looked surprisingly like Mordant. Beneath the jacket, she wore a purple kimono of what also seemed silk. Her hair was elaborately done up in an elaborate style, and attached to her forehead were lacquered gold-sprinkled combs overlaid with a gold-lacquered chrysanthemum crest. And her eyes, I could swim in her eyes, drown in them, die in them, and go to a watery grave happier than I'd ever been in my entire miserable existence. She was as nothing I'd ever seen or could ever hope to see again. Madness, insanity, I, apropos the cynic, apropos the realist, apropos who knew better than anyone else, to even open myself up to the possibility of such an experience was to admit that there were far greater possibilities to life than I had ever dared imagine. She was beautiful, she was soulful, and best of all, she was evil. Well, of course, naturally, that had to be clear, wasn't it? She was evil. And what did that mean to me? No chance of being let down. No chance of betrayal. No chance of her turning out to be something other than what she was. If I did follow the call of my heart, I was going into it with my eyes wide open, dazzled by her beauty, but wide open. Every woman that I had ever become romantically involved with had not only turned out to be something other than what I'd expected, but had wound up betraying my trust in the process. Here was a woman, though, whom I knew I could never trust. Ever. It removed all doubt. I would never have to worry if she would betray me. Only how?
I hear tell that you occasionally have been known to speak.
I am apropos. That is my full name, actually.
Apropos. A most unusual name.
And to whom do I have the honor of speaking?
My left leg was trembling slightly, and I steadied it. Since that was my good leg, I certainly didn't want it going out from under me. Falling flat on my face was not the best way to make a good first impression.
I am Wang Ho, Vera Wang Ho, leader of the Skang Ki family, founding member of the Forked Tong. I am who your Imperial has been searching for quite some time.
He's hardly my Imperial. I'm just a visitor here.
And yet, for a visitor, you have made quite an impression and have found yourself in the midst of some very troubled circumstances.
Call it a knack.
Oh, I call it far more than that. I call it most interesting. So, it is my understanding that you wish to join the Forked Tong. Why should we permit that?
The question could be easily turned around. Why should I want to join? I have grievances against your organization.
Do you?
You killed my teacher, Ali.
Ali, yes. The previous owner of that sword. He imparted knowledge and wisdom to you, did he?
What my teacher taught me remains between he and I, just as the unbalanced scales for his death remain between you and I.
I see. And what would you have apropos? Revenge? Revenge upon the sisters who killed him? Can you pick out which ones did it?
She gestured sweepingly around the room.
Perhaps I could just avenge myself upon you.
You could. However, be aware that I did not order the attack upon Ali. I do not direct every move the sisters make. In this instance, sisters were doing it for themselves. They have their own plans, their own priorities.
So, you do not condone what happened?
I did not say that.
It was difficult for me to believe I was admiring the laugh of someone who was chuckling over the death of my teacher. And yet, so it was.
For reasons you do not yet fully comprehend, what happened to Ali was no tragedy.
If I do not fully comprehend them, then perhaps it would be best for you to explain them to me.
She regarded me thoughtfully for a moment, and then stepped down toward me. It was only at that point I realized she was standing upon a slightly raised platform. She descended 4 steps so that she was almost at eye level with me. She remained taller than I, but not by much.
I would explain to one who is part of the Forked Tongue. Are you joining us?
I've already expressed my interest. It was getting difficult for me to remain focused. Since she was closer, I was able to detect the aroma of some sort of scent she was wearing. It smelled like honeysuckle and lilacs, and was nearly enough to make me lightheaded. The most amazing thing of all was, I wasn't certain whether it was some sort of fragrance she added after a bath, or whether it was her own natural body scent.
To join the Forked Tongue requires far more than an expression of interest. It requires a show of dedication.
Dedication to an organization whose representatives attacked me at the fish market?
A mere test.
Of what? Of me? Or of this? My hand went to the hilt of the Toshi sword. I wasn't sure, but it seemed to me the Aeneas ninja suddenly tensed as if expecting trouble. Trouble from me? Or trouble from the sword itself? Pieces were falling into place in my mind.
Our motivations will remain a closed book to you for now, apropos. Consider, though, the fact that we have not yet killed you should be enough to indicate that there is more to the Forked Tongue than you suspect.
Perhaps, or perhaps it's simply an indication that you feel you can't kill me.
Oh, we can.
Oh, can you?
Yes, we can.
My entire body was quivering. I had never wanted a woman so much before, and I could see it in her dark brown eyes. There was feeling for me there as well. She would never admit to it, of that I was sure. But it was there. We were having a powerful effect on each other.
You know what I want. Information. A balancing of the scales. Tell me what you want.
Proof of your interest in the Forked Tongue.
The Imperial wants me dead, and I am an outsider wherever else I go. What more proof would you require?
That is simply the nature of your personal predicament. That is not proof.
What would you consider proof, then?
The princess.
You mean Mitsu?
Yes, the very one.
How would she be proof of anything?
Bring her to us.
To you?
Deliver her to us, and we will know that you are genuinely interested in joining the Forked Tongue and are deserving of the knowledge we can impart.
Now, the truth was I was so besotted with Vera Wang Ho that I would have brought her the beaten and bloodied corpse of just about anyone it was within my power to obtain, if I knew it would put a smile upon her carefully painted face. But Mitsu? The thought of putting her into the hands of these criminals.
Have no fear. We will not harm her.
And how would I know that?
Because she would be of no use to us dead. It is our intention to use her as a bargaining chip in dealing with her father.
That might well be a dead end. There may not be much love lost between father and daughter. What if your intentions fail? If you insist on some sort of deal in exchange for Mitsu's life, and her father tells you all to go to hell, to do your worst. He is not someone who is concerned about the value of human life. You might have as much luck threatening his favorite tea service as his daughter.
There is that possibility. Should that transpire, though, that will be our problem, not yours. And if it does occur, I repeat, she will not be harmed in any way. We do have boundaries and depths to which we would not stoop.
I see. So you would kill an old man, but not young girls?
Yes, that is exactly right. So, what is your answer?
If I refuse?
If you are truly interested in the Forked Tongue, you would have no reason to refuse, would you?
That is true. Very well, I accept.
Excellent. The means by which you obtain her is up to you.
Damn generous of you, especially considering I'm not the most popular individual with the Imperia just now. Perhaps I can head straight back to the palace right now. It'll be a hard ride for several straight days, but...
That will do you very little good.
That was the sister who had brought me here.
By this time, the little drug I put in the tea will have worn off. Even now, word is undoubtedly being sent to the palace by swiftest messenger. You'll never be able to overtake it before the palace is alert and ready for your return.
Great. So the task is impossible.
Think of it more as an opportunity to prove your ingenuity and your devotion.
The way she said that almost made my heart puddle around my feet. And it was all I could do to refocus.
And if and when I manage to obtain her?
Do you remember the bridge that leads into the fish market? Bring her to the top of that bridge and we will handle matters from there.
All right. I stood there, uncertain as to what I should do next. I know what I wanted to do. I wanted to pull Vera to me, to lose myself in her. But these are hardly what I would call ideal circumstances for a first date.
You may go. The sister will see you on your way. Oh, and apropos, it is fortunate you agreed to our terms.
Why?
Because if you had refused, you would not have left this shrine alive. And having made a pledge to the Forked Tongue, if you attempt to abandon it, you will not leave this country alive.
The woman, with whom I was madly, deeply, passionately in love, had just threatened to kill me. It sounded so right. You will not leave this country alive. The entire journey back to Tekyo, the words kept echoing in my mind. At the same time, the scent of Vera Wang lingered in my nostrils. I kept trying to determine just exactly what had happened. Had I been deluding myself? Was she wearing some sort of perfume? Perhaps that was addling my mind. Or could it be that she had some deep hypnotic power? Perhaps it was something as simple as that she was a weaver. Why not? There was no reason to think that weavers were unique to my country. There was every chance that Vera possessed some sort of mystic ability that was causing her to manipulate my perceptions. I didn't care. All I cared about was the passion that Vera raised within me. The hows and whys of it were of no interest. All I knew was, just as Mitsu had so deftly predicted was possible, I had encountered a woman whom I knew on a gut level was my soulmate. So besotted was I that all I could think was, should she stab me in the back in the dark, at least I'd be dying at her hand. Honestly, even as I think back upon it, it would be hard to believe that any mere mortal would have been anything except totally enamored with that high-priced Ho. For Vera Wang Ho and the Forked Tongue came with a very high price indeed. Princess Mitsu had never been anything but considerate to me. All right, yes, we had a significant difference of opinion when it came to such matters as the sanctity of human life and flatly expecting people to execute themselves in order to accommodate one's sense of honor. But other than that, our time together had been everything from relaxing to enlightening. So how was I supposed to take the first female that I had genuinely come to think of as a friend and turn her over to an organization composed of thieves, murderers, criminals, and oversexed shadow warriors who tended towards non-sequiturs? The answer was, reluctantly, but I was going to have to do it nevertheless. Upon departing the shrine of Vera Wang Ho, the Aeneas ninja who had brought me there lent me her horse. The intelligence of the animal was beyond measure.
Hello, friend. Take this man to Tekyo and use the secret ways.
Yes, she spoke to the horse, and the horse nodded, apparently in comprehension. And at that moment, I would not have been surprised if the ebony equine had started chatting up a storm, not unlike Mordant. She whispered in the animal's ears. Even with her voice so hushed, I immediately recognized that dementedly erotic tone. She was running her hands up and down the horse's neck.
I think I'd better go.
I was hoping to rescue the animal before it found itself with its mistress hanging upside down under it doing God only knew what.
Unlike you and your sisters, I can't blend with the shadows.
Reluctantly, she stepped away from the horse.
What do I do with the horse once I've reached the city?
The horse will return to me at our arranged place of meeting.
Oh.
This was one hell of an impressive horse. I urged the horse forward, and truthfully, it needed little urging. I think it was as happy to get away from that overheated harridan as I was. Eventually, we made it to the outskirts of Tekyo. I still had my cloak. Unfortunately, it was with me in that the weather had turned inclement. If I walked through the city with my hood up, it would attract no attention, since people would simply assume it was to keep my head dry. If the sun were out and the weather were balmy, I would have been even more noticeable than I already was. The horse stopped with the city in sight, and I realized that my ride was done. I eased off the horse and patted it on the side of the head.
I wish you were mine.
The horse bobbed its head, perhaps coincidentally, or perhaps it just simply agreed wholeheartedly with the sentiment. Then it was gone, back into the forest. I made my way into the city, glad for its size. I had money on me. The Imperial had been generous in a stipend he'd provided me while I was in the palace, and it wasn't as if I'd had anything to spend it on, so most of it was still with me. It meant that I would be able to get a room for the night again without attracting attention. Thanks to the weather, the streets were half as crowded as they'd been when I'd first arrived. Even so, they were still teeming with people, and losing myself in the throng was no difficulty. I studied everyone I passed, always wondering if this person or that person was actually a member of the Forked Tongue, watching me, spying upon me, and ready at any time to relay word to Vera as to what I was up to. This exercise in uncertainty and fear was with me until I found myself a room at a small inn, situated right near, as luck and also design on my part would have it, the foot of the bridge that I was supposed to cross to summon Vera Wang Ho and her skanky associates. Unfortunately, I saw something rather dire on my way to the inn. I saw myself. Specifically, pictures, drawings of myself adorning walls of assorted buildings. I was scowling in the drawing, and some of the details of the ears and nose were wrong, and the eyes were definitely not quite right. Apparently, the artist had never been required to draw eyes such as mine, and so he produced something more in line with what he was familiar. As a result, I didn't look exactly chimpanzee, but I didn't look exactly like myself either. There was writing beneath the picture. I didn't have to be able to read it to guess what it said. Reward for my capture. I didn't know whether it said dead or alive, but I wouldn't have been surprised were that the case. I felt ill as I registered at the inn, even as I kept my hood well over my face. I was provided with a simple room with more of those paper sliding doors such as I'd seen at the palace. There was a rolled-up sleeping mat in the corner and a small pot of hot water with tea nearby. Freshly put out with the steam rising, I undid my weapons and lined them up next to each other, determined to keep them no farther away than arm's reach lest I require them quickly. I sipped the tea and ate sparsely of some rice that my host later provided. Other than that, I kept to myself, lying upon my back and staring up at the ceiling, and wondering what in the world I was going to do. I couldn't just wander about in Tokyo. My face made me problematic enough in terms of recognizability, but now it had been pasted all over town on a wanted poster, which meant as soon as the weather became balmy, I'd have no excuse to wander around with my hood up, and I was in trouble. The four paper walls surrounding me might be my new permanent home. I could just try and flee Tokyo. For that matter, flee Chimpan altogether. Running away. I could handle running away. God knows I'd done it before, and was quite comfortable with the concept. It had the warmth of familiarity. Three problems with that. First, there was little doubt in my mind that somehow, somewhere, the Forked Tongue, or the Aeneas Ninjas, or the Skanky family, in short, every deadly entity in Chimpan, was keeping an eye on my progress and was prepared to strike back with deadly force if I did not keep my part of the enforced bargain. Whatever else happened, it was perversely intriguing that I had maintained my knack for incensing deadly people. Second, there was my fascination with Vera. Even if, through some miracle, I managed to elude all pursuers and find my way out of Chimpan, where to? I'd no idea, but out. That would mean that I would be leaving behind the woman who had awakened something within me I'd no idea was there in the first place. Was it odd, perverse, inexplicable that I was so attracted to an entity who could easily represent my destruction? Look no further than a moth's fascination with a flame to know the answer to that question. And third, it would still leave dangling the murder of Ali. My great mission of vengeance unfulfilled. But why? Why should that matter to me? I lay there all the long night, staring up at the ceiling and pondering it. I had always prided myself on knowing exactly why I did the things I did. Yes, granted, there have been some who claim the contrary was true. That I, in fact, lived in a perpetual sense of denial, supposedly always doing what was right, whatever that might be, while simultaneously fabricating reasons that were self-centered and self-serving. Pure tripe, in my opinion. I knew myself and knew what the world was getting when it was dealing with me, even if the world chose to live in self-denial. Yet in this instance, I found myself flummoxed, and inevitably my thoughts kept turning back to my time in Wuin. I had done bad things there, a lot of bad things. I had told myself that I had done so because I was not myself, but was instead under the control of something else, something sinister. However, truth be told, much of what I did, I took a dark and sinister pleasure in. How that applied to my situation in Chimpan was obvious. If in Wuin I had done terrible things, and I had, then I was now being compelled by the laws and forces of nature to do equal but opposite things. The thought that those black-clad bitches had killed Ali with impunity was gnawing at my gut, so much so that I knew I had to do something. The problem was, fetching Mitsu into the hands of the Forked Tongue was an evil deed in and of itself, which, if my theory was correct, meant that while I was busy trying to even the scales on one side, I was going to wind up tipping them against me at the same time. But as much as I turned it over and over in my mind, I was forced to the inevitable conclusion that there was no other way. And considering I was someone who excelled in finding another way when all seemed hopeless, that was a frustrating admission to make. The only conclusion to which I could finally come was that if it were to be done, then it would be best to do it quickly. With that in mind, I immediately turned my thoughts to pondering just how to go about getting Mitsu to the Forked Tongue. Truthfully, conceiving the mischief took me almost no time at all. Fairly impressive, I had to admit. My ability to cause difficulty for others remained undiminished even as trials were heaped upon my shoulders. Having developed the plan, I then proceeded to get no further sleep that night. How was it that I was intending to atone in any sense for the evil I had done as the Peace Lord of Wuin, and yet the first step in that atonement was to put an innocent girl at risk? I satisfied myself by saying repeatedly that she wasn't really going to be at risk, that the Forked Tongue, just as Vera Wang Ho had stated, would find her of far greater use alive than dead. Furthermore, it could always be said that in some ways she was living on borrowed time. Had I not interceded when I'd first seen her being confronted by those angry circus folk, she would very possibly have been beaten to death right then and there. In that sense, she owed me her life, and really, I should be able to do with it as I saw fit. Remarkably, at the time, that made a kind of twisted sense. At least I thought it did. This is further proof that people will say or do virtually anything to justify their own actions. So it was that very, very early, several hours before the rising of the sun, I stepped out onto the deserted street. There was still a steady mist of rain coming in, and I kept my cloak tightly over me. There was a faint but steady wind from the south, the direction of the fish market carrying with it a distinctly scaly aroma. Then all I had to do was whistle. I knew how to whistle. I put my lips together and blew. The note was long and sustained and quite sharp. It carried high and far over the rooftops of Teikyo. I held it for as long as I could, stopped, and did it again. After that, I stood there. I felt no need to keep whistling. Instead, I waited. And waited. At one point, the proprietor of the inn stuck his head out and gave me a very curious look. He still had not seen my face clearly, since I had been careful to keep my hood up. He probably thought I was a loon. That was perfectly acceptable to me. As long as he didn't think I was a fugitive from the stained honor of the Imperia, we'd get along just perfectly. He ducked back in without questioning why I was out there in such unfortunate weather, which was fine with me. I continued to stand there, watching, waiting, looking to the skies, depending on something that I really didn't fully understand. Then, far in the distance, I saw a small, dark object, wings flapping smoothly in the air against the night sky. I didn't want to get too excited too quickly. It could be a large hawk or eagle or some other more traditional avian. But within moments, the figure drew closer, and I knew my initial impression had been correct. Part of the magic that was mordant was his ability to hear my summoning him from, it seemed, anywhere. Back in Wuin, it didn't matter where I was. I would just let out with a piercing whistle, and lo and behold, he would show up before long. If I was anywhere outside, Morton would somehow hear me and would come, no matter where he was. I realized belatedly that it might have been a good idea to test the limits of that responsiveness when I'd been floating on a piece of wood in the middle of bloody nowhere. But it hadn't occurred to me. Besides, Morton didn't just magically appear from one place to the next. Presuming he could have broken off from whatever he was doing to see why I was summoning him, it might have taken him days, even weeks, to fly the distance separating us. By that point, I would have been fish food, so ultimately it didn't make any difference. I wound the trailing end of my cloak around my forearm several times, providing a cushion, and I extended my arm as he neared, providing him a perch. Making his final approach, he ceased his flapping and glided the rest of the way, nestling gently down upon my arm.
So, quite a situation you've gotten yourself into.
You've heard?
It's all through the palace. The Imperior is incensed with you, and instead of doing the Imperior the courtesy of ending your life, you instead killed the leader of the Hamunrai, the most formidable warriors in Qinpan. Every Hamunrai with the slightest sense of honor, namely all of them, wants to be the one to make your shoulders lonesome for your head. They're roaming the countryside looking for you.
How flattering. What, they're not scouring the city as well?
I think they believe you would never be so stupid as to come here.
Well, I tried to make it a policy never to be underestimated when it comes to stupidity.
Don't count on it to help you in the long run. They'll be looking here soon enough. So what do you want? I'll tell you right now, if you're looking for an airlift out of here, I don't think I'm going to be able to carry you.
I need help, all right, but not from you.
The princess.
Yes.
What makes you think she can help you? If she were a son, perhaps. As it is, her father has little to no regard for her. Or haven't you been paying attention?
I assure you I have. Nevertheless, she's my best shot at trying to salvage this. To begin with, I didn't kill Go-No-Go.
Didn't you?
No. Why? Did you think I did?
Well, he was stabbed in the back. That certainly sounded like your style.
Now, wait. No, you're right. That does sound like me. Be that as it may, I was not responsible. But I know who was.
Really? Who?
A member of the Aeneas Ninja.
Really? That might well be of interest to the Imperior.
That, along with the fact that I was subsequently approached by the Folk Tong. They want me to join them. If the Imperior has any interest in burrowing into the organization and destroying them from within, the opportunity may well have presented itself, provided the Imperior's people don't kill that opportunity before it has a chance to benefit them.
For the opportunity, read apropos.
That is the way of it.
And you believe that somehow the princess can fix all of this?
Yes, I need to meet with her.
Meet with her?
Yes, meet with her.
Why? I can relay whatever you want to say.
But you cannot guarantee that she will believe it. Plus, she may have questions, and time is far too much of the essence. While you're busy flying back and forth, some of the Imperial soldiers may find me and make short work of me.
She may not come.
She'll come. I'm certain of it.
For the longest few moments of my life, Mordant pondered what I was saying. If he refused to cooperate or smelled some sort of trap, then I was effectively buggered.
All right. Are you staying within this place?
Yes.
Don't go anywhere.
I can assure you there is very little likelihood of that.
With that, Mordant bounced off my arm like a diver bounding into a lake. He ricocheted skyward, bouncing off buildings to gain altitude, and moments later was angling away into the sky. There was nothing for me to do but wait. I returned to my room, taking care not to make any sort of eye contact with the innkeeper. One would have thought that every hour that passed would have made me feel more and more secure that I had not somehow been betrayed by Mitsu, or even the innkeeper. Instead, all I did was get increasingly nervous, figuring that since the attack had not come yet, it would probably come soon. The more time passed, the more I dwelt on all sorts of possible outcomes, and none of them, not a single damned one, was a good one. So I hardly think it should come as a surprise when the sound of footsteps at my door nearly made me leap out of my skin.
Apropos?
It was definitely Mitsu. I could see her shadow. There was no one with her.
Yes?
If this is a bad time...
No.
I thought you had a woman in there with you.
No woman. Just me doing my best impression of a woman.
Oh. Well, it's very effective.
Thanks.
Shall I come in there?
No, that's quite all right.
I got to my feet and grabbed my staff. She was once again dressed in a manner similar to a boy. If I had known her, I would have thought her a him. I shook my head in wonderment. Even though I knew her gender, I never would have been able to tell.
I see you're wearing your traveling clothes.
Mitsu bowed slightly.
I'd be a bit conspicuous if I endeavored to depart looking the way you've seen me back at the palace.
You mean naked?
That too, I suppose.
I looked into her face, and the guilt I felt was almost overwhelming. It took genuine mental force to get my legs to move, since I knew I was leading her to betrayal and capture.
Where are we going?
Out of here for the time being. Who knows who's listening in?
She nodded, and we headed out. As we walked into the street, thoughts continued to tumble through my head. Would she hate me? The notion that she would come to hate me over this betrayal was remarkably painful. I couldn't blame her if she did, though. Why wouldn't she? Who in the world doesn't hate someone who betrays their trust? Then again, I've had my own trust betrayed so many times that I'd become used to it. Maybe I'd just forgotten how much it hurt.
Paul! Slow down!
I was so self-involved that I didn't realize she was talking to me at first.
Pardon?
I was saying that you could have thanked me for dropping everything, sneaking out of the palace.
Of course, I'm sorry.
We were strolling along the riverbank. The bridge was not far away at all. It seemed more than just a man-made structure. It was a metaphorical bridge, daring me to cross it, and in doing so, cross over into depths of betrayal I once would never have thought possible.
Morden says you claim you did not kill Gol-Nurgle.
The amusement had vanished from her voice. She was all business now. This was a princess faced with a supplicant who desperately needed her aid and mercy.
That's right, I didn't. I had nothing to do with that. Or with the drugging of the tea which rendered all the men unconscious.
Drugging of death? Is that how you got away from my father?
Well, yes. Why? What did you hear?
As the story has grown in the retelling, you were described as a fiercely demented warrior who hacked and slashed his way out past some of the best soldiers Chinpan has to offer.
Would that it were so. No, I tiptoed quietly around them while they were lying insensate.
And who had drugged them?
One of my rules of thumb when engaged in a series of lies was to keep matters simple. If one couldn't come up with a fabrication that would sound convincing, nothing was as easy to put across as ignorance.
I don't know.
And why would they have administered this drug? To what end?
Again, I don't know.
If it was an enemy intent on performing mischief, why didn't they commit it while my father and his people lay helpless?
Perhaps we're dealing with a disordered mind. We can ponder it from now until the end of existence and still find no comprehensible reason for any of the actions taken.
That is very true.
We were drawing nearer and nearer to the bridge. I wanted to shout a warning, to keep walking, to do anything except do what I was doing. And yet I kept us moving forward. The day remained overcast, although the rain had stopped falling. I looked around and tried to figure out where the eyes of the Fork Tong were. Thanks to the weather, shadows seemed to crawl everywhere through the crowded buildings. At any moment, someone could come leaping out and grab Mitsu from my side.
So what would you have me do now?
I'm not sure.
Interesting, the position you find yourself in.
I wouldn't exactly call this fiasco interesting.
Oh, I would.
We were at the edge of the bridge. All I had to do was walk along, and presuming she followed, we would be at the midpoint within moments. At that point, I would have fulfilled my end of the bargain. She saw my hesitation and glanced at the bridge.
Do you wish to walk over to the fish market? I think you'd want to go nowhere near the place, considering the difficulties we've encountered there before.
One of the greatest strengths, the most consistent certainties in my life, was that I was a superb liar. It had never presented a difficulty for me, yet I sounded incredibly unconvincing to myself as I said,
"What an opportunity, then, to explore it without people trying to kill us."
She'll never fall for that. Ever.
By all means.
I gulped deeply as we set foot on the bridge. I wanted to scream, run, run now, run quickly and as far as you can, Leave me to my miserable fate, and I did scream. It screamed it so loud within my head that my brain was aching. Insane as it sounded, I was hoping that the shouting from within my skull would be heard by her. Unsurprisingly, it didn't work. We started across the bridge of no return.
Remember, apropos, when I willingly sacrificed my handmaiden in order to satisfy my father's sense of honor?
Of course I do.
And you condemned me for it. Even when I explained it to you, you still never truly accepted it or appreciated my point of view.
I appreciated it as best I could. I apologize if it was insufficient for you.
She looked at me thoughtfully. I tried to keep my gaze from wandering. My steps felt even more leaden than they usually did. My right leg was so heavy I thought it was going to drag me right off the bridge, despite the high handrails.
What if I told you there was a way out of our current predicament?
What sort of way out?
Well, let us say that I am able to convince my father of the truth of your story, that you were not responsible for the death of Gornogo. Unfortunately, it will do nothing to erase the stain of failure attached to your design for his other home. That mark still remains, and the scale would have to be balanced.
Then what would happen?
A life would have to be sacrificed. Fortunately, that could be solved without the loss of yours. All you need do is select a personal servant to lay down his or her life in order to redeem your honor. Then all will be well.
But I didn't have any personal servants.
Have you forgotten?
I stopped walking. We were about 30 feet shy of the middle of the bridge.
Forgotten?
Timtop.
Believe it or not, I blanked on the name at first. But then I remembered.
The bathing maiden?
Yes, you had sex with her. She may not have been exclusively your servant, but being intimate with a palace servant would certainly qualify as personal in matters of honor.
Yes, I had sex with her, but it wasn't really personal. It was, truthfully, it wasn't anything. It was a diversion, a way to pass the time.
Ah, I thought as much. You wanted something else.
That was absolutely true, yes. I wanted passion, depth of emotion. The bathing maiden had been efficient, interested in pleasuring me, but beyond that, there had been no connection. And I was finding that I wanted, needed that connection. Otherwise, all it did was reinforce the emptiness within me. In short, I wanted the intensity of feeling that I hadn't even known I was missing until I had encountered Vera Wang Ho.
Yes, exactly.
I thought that might be the case. Still, the physical act was undertaken. That is sufficient for our needs.
You're telling me that all I have to do to get into the Imperium's good graces is to ask an innocent young woman to lay down her life? To die simply because we had sexual intercourse?
It is slightly more complicated than that, but yes, that is essentially it.
I can't. That would...
That would make you as bad as me?
My thoughts were swimming. I moved away from her, needing distance, trying to find grounding. Should I do that? Could I actually ask an innocent young woman to sacrifice her life for me? Was I that craven? Or was it craven? If I kept in mind Mitsu's argument over the past months, then to take her suggestion would simply be in keeping with the philosophies and the... No. Just that, flatly, my inner voice rejected it. And when one considered that there was no greater advocate of my finding ways to live than my inner voice, then that had to be considered a thumpingly flat rejection. There was only so far and no further that I would go to save my own miserable hide. This was, believe it or not, a bit of a revelation for me. I'd really thought there was nothing I would not stop at to keep breathing. But apparently, that wasn't the case.
No, I can't do that.
Even if it provides a means of saving your life?
Even if I have other considerations.
Yet you would sacrifice me to prove your loyalty to the Forked Tongue.
As much in disarray as my thoughts had been, that comment of hers suddenly penetrated the haze of confusion like an ice spear. I turned to face her and realized we were standing right in the center of the bridge. Without even noticing it, since I had been so distracted by the torment and confusion in my mind, I had brought her to where I had promised. My mouth was suddenly dry. She was shaking her head, and there was a satisfied smirk playing upon her lips.
Ah, apropos. Ever the contradiction. You would condemn me for sacrificing a handmaiden, and yet you think nothing of placing me in jeopardy when it suits your needs.
Saying that I think nothing of it isn't remotely accurate. I've agonized over this more than any other decision I've made in my life. And how the hell do you know that's what I was doing?
Except she really didn't have to provide me the answer, because I already knew it. Even as she stepped toward me, placed her right fist into her left palm, and mashed them against her breast 3 times, it was clear to me.
I knew it. I knew you were one of them. Were you there in the shrine, standing there, watching me sweat?
No, I was at the palace, but I learned of it quickly enough. We have eyes and ears everywhere, and a quick spy who relayed information to me with unmatched alacrity.
Mordant, I thought I saw something winged in the trees of the forest. It was he.
Yes.
She patted my face. Reflexively, I drew back slightly. My thoughts were a strange mishmash of triumph that I had fulfilled my end of the bargain, thus proving my loyalty and relief over the fact that Mitsu was in fact in no danger at all since she was already a part of this insanity. But I had not known that Mitsu was part of it when I had willingly brought her to this place to put her at the mercy of the Forked Tong.
Don't be concerned, apropos. I'm very pleased matters have worked out this way. Now you will never be able to feel morally superior to me. After all, my handmaidens willingly and knowingly make the sacrifices that are asked of them. You, on the other hand, were going to take an innocent girl and sacrifice her for the purely self-serving purpose of showing your loyalty and desire to join our cause. So whose escutcheon is the more stained, yours or mine?
I have no escutcheon. I have nothing, and perhaps that's exactly what I deserve.
She drew my face to hers and kissed me lightly on the forehead.
Do not feel that way. You are about to embark on the most glorious adventure of your life. One that you richly deserve.
I hated it when people told me that.
Well, at least you had nothing to do with the attack on my teacher.
You don't realize. I was the one you fought that night. You served to delay me so I wasn't in the hut when he...
You? But no...
Yes. It was on my way back from that business that I came upon Mordant and recognized...
I saw you naked.
What?
I cut the woman I fought. Cut her badly. I would have seen a vicious red wound on you.
Here, you mean?
She touched her shoulder area.
A wound that might look like the tongue of a dragon?
Yes, just like... God, your tattoo.
One of the sisters obliged me. I consider my body a work of art, apropos. You defaced it. I had to restore it. A job well done, don't you think? Is my body not a piece of art once more?
Yes, I'm especially impressed by your brushwork.
The sun had come out, but you couldn't have told that from where we were. Following me to have been following a flickering shadow during a moonless night as we made our way to a section of town far removed from any we'd been to. The streets grew narrower and narrower to the point where it seemed almost impossible to keep moving through them, and yet we did. I had gone back to the inn and got my belongings, and we had headed out almost immediately. Now I was starting to wish I'd stayed where I was. I was constantly checking my person every time I came near any of the denizens of this pit to make sure that no one had relieved me of any valuables.
That's probably a very wise thing for you to do, I assure you.
As assurances went, it wasn't very reassuring. Because the buildings were so close together, the roofs overlapped. As a result, no sun was filtering through. I felt as if we were swimming in gloom, just to try and distract myself from the sense of foreboding. I tried to engage Mitsu in conversation as to how she wound up being part of an organization dedicated to removing her father from office. She was not especially forthcoming, unfortunately, which was a bit of a change from the young woman I'd known who was happy to talk about practically anything. Then again, it seemed ridiculous to think of her as the young woman I'd known, considering, obviously, I hadn't really known a damn thing about her.
You've no idea what my father's done. No idea what he's like. If you knew, you'd understand.
I can't know unless you tell me.
Not yet. When it's time, you'll know.
Wonderful. But I still don't understand. If you live in the palace with him and you want him out of power, why not just...
Kill my father?
Well, yes. Except you make it sound so unpleasant when you say it that way.
Mitsu looked disappointed with me, which, considering the circumstances, was quite an achievement.
That is not an option. Eventually you will understand, but not now.
I wasn't sure if she was being patronizing, or whether she was one of those people who believed that fate and the gods dictated the timing of certain things, and it wasn't for her to do anything to muck with that timing. The one thing I knew for certain, though, was I was starting to get well and truly annoyed.
Where are we going? Will I understand that?
Yes, once we get there.
Wonderful.
Nothing more was said. Eventually, we reached a section of town so impenetrable that we were the only people on the narrow street. I felt as if the buildings were alive, moving toward us to hem us in so we'd have no possible means of escape. Suddenly, I collided with something and realized belatedly it was Mitsu's back. At least I thought it was. It had gotten so dark that I could barely see her face. If she'd been dressed in her Aeneas ninja black, she would have been literally invisible.
Through here.
I had no idea where she was pointing. I couldn't see a damn thing.
Where?
I felt her placing her hands upon my shoulders and guiding me slowly forward. I kept my walking staff extended, like a blind man with a cane, waiting for it to bump into a wall so I would know when to stop walking. But it encountered no obstructions. Instead, I kept moving, and within moments was off the street entirely. I was completely surrounded by blackness. No air currents were moving about me. I was in some sort of structure, but how big it was or what it looked like, I couldn't even begin to guess.
Mitsu! Mitsu!
And then that scent wafted toward me. That singular, incredible scent. My skin tingled just from the slightest hint of it. I felt as if it was lifting me up, up off my feet, sending me soaring above the city. As if I could touch the heavens, just buoyed by it.
So, you've proven your loyalty.
It was she. Her voice was coming from just ahead of me. I moved in the direction where I thought it was coming from, and just ahead was the gentle flickering of light. More candles. The Fork Tong apparently used more candles than everyone else in Qinpan put together. It was essential that I not let my infatuation, or was it obsession, with Vera Wang Ho cloud my judgment.
You deduced that because Mitsu brought me here.
Yes.
Are more of your sisters here?
No. We are alone.
I listened carefully, my hearing as sharp as ever. I was reasonably sure she was telling the truth. I could detect no one else around. The twinkling illumination made it easier for me to see the doorway of the room just ahead. One more deep breath, and then I entered the room. Vera Wang Ho was seated cross-legged upon the floor. As opposed to the far more elaborate garb she had sported when I first encountered her, now she was outfitted in a simple white kimono. Her face was still delicately made up, though, her hair elaborately piled atop her head. That first rush of passion I had felt for her paled in comparison to what I felt for her now. That same giddy, intoxicating rush of sensation. There was a small table in front of her, with the now familiar sight of tea set up. Two cups were upon the table on opposite sides. The steeping tea was in the middle. She gestured for me to sit, and I did so. It was something of a relief. In her presence, I was literally becoming weak in the knees. It would hardly be the height of manliness to collapse in front of her.
I confess, I am glad. Very, very glad.
Really? Why would that be?
Why do you think?
I couldn't begin to guess.
To guess or to hope?
The truth was the latter rather than the former, but I did not trust myself to speak. For someone who had spent a lifetime being glib, I was atypically tongue-tied. I reminded myself that the woman was evil, which, granted, was part of what I found so attractive, and did not make a move for my cup. She saw that I was allowing it to sit there, and appeared most amused by my caution. Without comment, she lifted her own cup and delicately sipped from it. I noticed a small bit of her bright red lipstick was rubbing off on the inside of the cup. I sipped from mine as well at that point.
What would you know, apropos?
No.
Would you know the truth, or would you know me?
I quickly put the cup down, because I could feel my hand starting to tremble.
Know you? In what sense?
She did not answer immediately, instead prolonging the delightful agony by simply sipping more tea. Then she held it a few inches from her face, and the smile widened ever so slightly.
Apropos, we are aware, we two.
Aware?
Yes. There are very few people in this world who are aware of the truth of things, who see the world for what it is and what it isn't. People with true clarity of vision. And when two such encounter each other, there is an instant attraction. You must have felt it. Do not bother to deny it.
I don't deny it.
You want to know why events of recent vintage have happened. You also want to know me. In every sense of the word, no. You may have either or. Choose.
I wanted to scream. I wanted to burst out of my skin. I wanted to clamber across the small table, knock her to her back, and take her right there on the floor of this darkened room. But I could not allow myself to become totally at the mercy of lustful impulses, no matter how gratifying they might be if acted upon. As much as I wanted her, burned for her, there were priorities that needed attending to. Things that simply had to be done.
Why have these things happened?
Vera Wang Ho looked truly surprised. I think there'd been no doubt in her mind that I would forgo all other concerns in favor of satisfying my carnal urges with the woman who might very likely be my true soulmate. Then the surprise gave way to approval? Yes. She didn't seem upset at all. In fact, it appeared that she was regarding me with something akin to approval.
Very well. Let us be specific, then. What do you wish to know?
Mitsu resides within the palace, as does the most obvious enemy that the Forked Tongue has. I understand Mitsu's rejection of the notion that she assassinated her own father. On the other hand, I suspect her loyalty to your organization would have prompted her to obey you if you ordered her to do it. Furthermore, with her there, she could very likely facilitate your getting your own agents and assassins within the palace walls. In short, if you wanted the Imperial dead, then he would be dead. Yet he lives. What am I to conclude from that?
You seem to be under the impression that the Imperior would die as do other men.
Well, why would he not? Is he not like other men?
No. He is a Shenong.
A what?
A Shenong, a wielder of sorcerous powers.
He's a weaver?
I mentally called up an image of the wrinkled little man and tried to comprehend how such a one could possibly be any sort of true magic user.
I don't believe it.
It does not matter whether you believe it or not.
She offered me tea and I politely waved her off.
It is true. Furthermore, he has knowledge that we need. Knowledge both general and specific, which precludes us from simply removing him from the equation. As much as we would like to.
What specific knowledge are you referring to?
Ah, that is not my story to tell. The point is, if we were able to kill him by treachery, it still would not serve our needs. Plus, the military might he wields is vast. Greater than we can readily combat on our own. So, because of the nature of our opponent, and the magics and might he wields, we had sought help in dealing with him. We thought we had found it. We had heard tell of a vastly powerful magician from a distant foreign land, a round-eyed individual similar to yourself. We had learned that he would be traveling by boat to a land some distance from here, known as Azure. We sent an emissary to meet him there. It was our intention to enlist his aid and bring him here to defeat the Imperior. But the famed sorcerer never arrived in Azure. As of this point, the vessel he was coming aboard is so overdue that it is generally believed his ship was lost in the crossing.
And this, sorcerer, what would his name be, just out of curiosity?
An odd name, actually. Almost as odd as yours. He was known as Ronald MacDonald of
the Clan MacDonald.
You've heard of him?
In passing, yes, I am. I think assuming him lost at sea at this point is probably a wise idea. It's been a long time.
Yes. And so we have taken other measures.
What other measures?
It has taken us years to reach a point of mutual trust and respect with them, but we have done so.
Them?
Them being the Mingol hordes, a fierce tribe that lives to the west of our land, beyond the outer provinces. Very soon they will come swarming over the hills of Qinpan and overwhelm the Imperior's army.
Are they a sufficient number to do so?
They are. With their help, we will be able to attend to the physical defenses. But we still require help against the Imperior himself. Help that you can provide.
That did not seem terribly likely to me.
I can. What can I do?
What would you do for me if I asked?
Anything. Anything you asked, anything you desired, anything within my ability.
She leaned forward, her breath upon my face, and it had the same sweet honeysuckle smell as her skin.
Do you trust me?
No.
The word had popped out before I even realized it. My eyes were half-lidded, but they snapped open as I realized the unexpected and potentially crushing honesty of my answer. I looked into her face to see her response, which I was certain would be roiling fury.
Well said. You know me well. Had you said yes, I would have felt most sorry for you. Perhaps I might even have done away with you in a fit of pique. One never knows what I might do.
She reached over and ran a tapering finger along the line of my chin. I trembled at her gentle touch.
But you always know just what to say, don't you?
It's how I've managed to survive.
Yes, yes, a survivor you are and shall be. I see that in you. Just as I also see in you the potential mystic edge that we need to overcome the Imperior. It is that edge that has made you such a priority with us.
The sword. My hand rested upon the bird-headed hilt of the weapon hanging at my waist.
The Tachi sword.
You are the bearer of the demon sword.
The what?
Kumugatu. The demon sword. You've no clue, apropos, how long it has been sought. You hold there a blade of legend and mystery. A blade that has passed from owner to owner, leaving devastation and death in its wake. It is said that the blade was spat up one day centuries ago from the very bowels of hell, emerging from an active volcano. That it landed in the hands of a powerful Shennong who was appalled by the amount of power it possessed and managed to bind it and harness it.
To say I was extremely nervous by that point would be to understate it. Here I'd had this damned thing, this literally damned thing, hanging at my side all this time, and I was suddenly discovering that it was the deadliest weapon in the country. I had already figured out that they were after the sword, and that it might even have some sort of power of its own. But the level of what she was describing bordered on the terrifying. Demons? Volcanoes? Spat up from the bowels of hell? I knew a little something about mystical talismans, and that little something was that whatever power they possessed, sooner or later turned around and bit you on the ass. Considering what she was describing, this one could rip off an entire backside with one chew. My impulse was to rip it off my belt and shout, "Take the bloody sword!" But I resisted it because, as I just admitted, I didn't trust her. And as long as I had something she wanted, I figured I was safe. Although safe was a very relative word under the circumstances.
Bind it and harness it.
Yes, with potent magics that remain to this day. Even so, the Shennong yielded to the temptation to use it, and its power consumed him. Since that time, it had been lost for ages. But it was finally tracked down by the Aeneas ninjas of the Skang Qi, in the possession of a madman named Ali.
He was no madman. He was my teacher, a great fighter.
She saw the anger in my face. Immediately she looked contrite, as if sorry that she was causing me pain.
Oh, oh, sweet apropos.
Her lips brushed against mine. I trembled upon the contact, but resisted the urge to lose myself, to give in to the pulsing urgency within me. Instead, with superhuman effort, I remained focused and insisted.
He was a great man, a great fighter.
I do not say this to hurt you, because I understand your devotion to him, and in a way it is touching. But you must understand, he was no fighter. He was a senile lunatic. Everyone knew it, even the people of his own village. but it pleased them to delude themselves into thinking that he was a great and wise man. Furthermore, they knew that he wielded a devastating power, but they had no desire to bring that power down upon themselves, so it was within their interest to cater to it. That power, of course, being the sword. Ali stumbled upon the magic words which had bound the sword, and they enabled him to harness its might. Without those magic words, the sword is simply an ordinary sword.
That's why you sent your shadow sisters. But if they needed to know these magic words in order to wield the sword, why did they kill him?
They didn't.
Don't tell me that. I saw with my own eyes.
What? His body?
Yes.
And the wounds?
He was lying flat on his stomach, so he was probably stabbed through the chest or...
Did you see blood pooling beneath him?
Well, no, but...
Apropos, the sisters did not kill him. To become possessor of the blade was not enough. We needed those magic words. But when he was confronted by the sisters, Ali had some sort of attack. His heart, perhaps, or something within his brain, we do not know. All we know is that one moment he was facing the sisters, and the next he had collapsed. When they checked his body, they found he was dead. If it is of any consolation, the sisters are reasonably sure he did not suffer. The end was very quick.
That's good to know.
When our people recognized the sword in the marketplace, they attacked you in hopes that you would speak the magic words and activate it, so that we would learn it in that way. But you did not do so. It does not matter now, though, for you have become our willing ally.
For a long moment, nothing was said. Then her lips were right against my ear, and her breath was hot against it.
You were his student, the inheritor of the sword, and you are our willing ally. Do you know the words? The words that activate the magic of the sword?
Of course I do, but I've learned something about alliances. What makes them function is when they operate from mutual strength. You need me because of what I know. If you know it as well, you will no longer need me, and my worth as your ally will be greatly diminished.
Perhaps. Or perhaps you are simply lying about knowing the magic phrase.
Always a possibility. Either way, I've no intention of telling you what it is.
Can you whisper it without my hearing it and bring the sword to life so I can see a demonstration?
Yes. If you have an overwhelming desire to die...
I was improvising as fast as I could now.
You see, once the blade is brought to life, it will slaughter everyone around it, save the blade's wielder, until they are all dead. Now, if you truly wish me to do this thing, then I can...
No, that will not be necessary.
Would you like me to...
No.
I was very much enjoying the power I was wielding at that moment. Even without the magic words, I was suddenly in charge. Vera was clearly daunted by the power of the blade and the implicit threat that I would use it. I felt as if it was shifting the balance of power over to me. Thus emboldened, I put my hand behind her head and pulled her to me. She stiffened slightly in surprise, but then became soft and pliant against me. When we parted, she smiled and touched my face.
You are the most exotic-looking person.
I've never met anyone like you. I'm not sure if there is anyone like you.
You may very well be right about that.
The second time our lips came into contact, it was more her kissing me than the other way around. Her tongue darted into my mouth, and the energy seemed to dance between us. My body trembled from it, and when we came up for air...
My spirit. My she. I shared a bit of mine with you and took some of yours into me, since you don't yet know how to focus it yourself. But I will teach you. Show you things you haven't known.
I reached for her breasts, but she placed her hand atop mine gently.
I will touch, and you will feel.
Then she blew out the candle.
Lie down upon your back.
And I did. And then...
Oh! Oh!